This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and once again, we are with Tony Alvarez. Tony, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Bruce. Glad to be with you.
So we'll start where we kind of left off, okay. Where Lancaster hit those numbers that were nuts in, say, 2005 and 6.
Right.
And your intention was to sell everything.
Yes.
Okay, and so you did that.
Yep.
Some of it went into exchange for commercial stuff, but by and large,
right.
You sort of hovered over the Lancaster market for the next few years and watched a pretty immediate reaction of these prices just descending like a rock.
Yes.
And it did. I mean, it was...
It was terrible.
In Riverside, it averaged 3-4% a month.
Wow.
So if you were literally going to flip a house and you figured 6 months, you were reducing the retail by something like 25% or 30% to get to your resale number.
Unreal.
I mean, that's completely nuts. And I'm sure Lancaster Palmdale was like
the
same way.
It was a bloodbath, yeah. If you think about it. But I was very happy. And it's terrible to say that because, you know, people always in the media and whatever, they start telling you about how people are losing their houses and stuff. And yes, that's true. But... I was ecstatic because having failed twice, not once, but twice before in the real estate business, and I'm maturing as I'm going through that time. You know, I was younger, and having reached a point where, with your guidance, I knew ahead of time what's going to happen. So now I'm looking at this going, okay, this makes perfect sense because I looked at your conclusion and then I went back and I analyzed it through what I had already experienced in my life and the data that was available at that moment. And I give you one example. I had built only two houses in the Antelope Valley that I actually had built. I bought the lot for $13,000. It ended up being two lots. And I have this 1,800 square foot house, one story, four bedroom, two bath house built. They're right across from each other. I put them up for sale one at a time. I didn't want them competing with each other, so I put one up for sale, $415,000. It sold immediately, and that house cost me $165,000 to build, including the fences, everything.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, so I'm staring at this, going, "This is crazy."
Mm-hmm.
Now. I closed that escrow.
That was 2005-ish or something?
Yeah, around
okay,
that
right
time.
In that
yes,
time. Okay.
Yeah. I closed that escrow. I list the other one right away. Same price. Nothing. I'm like, drop that price. But we ended up selling it for 390-something. I forget what the heck it was.
Okay.
Which I was blessed to do.
Yeah.
And the only reason I got that price at that time was a lady comes up whose father was paying for the house cash.
Okay.
For her.
Oh, wow.
She was a single mom and all that, and the father just wanted her to have something new and safe, and this was a little private street. It was everything that they wanted. So, that thing could have become a rental. You know, I could have owned it through the whole market, you know.
Oh, in Rosamond, we had, you know, we went through the 200s all the way up to 285. And we went pending on all those last units. I mean, people fighting for them, literally spending the night on the last release in Rosamond, if you can believe that. Okay.
Well, see, I find that, to me, it's just amazing because in 2006, that last whole downturn, what I walked away from that whole experience was, I can do this again.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting? You didn't even need liquidity to do it the first time.
Right.
You just needed access to money.
Yes.
It's a lot easier if you have some, if you've kind of liquidated.
Without a doubt, but to be honest with you, I think I wouldn't change a thing. The hard money lender and his interest rates and his points and everything that everybody complains about made me be a better
investor.
That's
right. It facilitated everything.
And I was glad to have him as a partner, which is what I really had. I had a partner that wouldn't ask me any questions about anything.
Yeah.
Up front, who are you? What do you know how to do? You know, the qualifications are all up front. They're front loaded. Once you go, okay, you're good to go.
Let's see what your deals look like.
Yes.
That was where he was going, okay, I'm safe
I went in to see Barry Cooper one day. And I went in because I wanted to change the deal. And the deal I wanted, quite frankly, was I didn't want to have to pay the mortgage payments as the thing was happening, because I was in and out of a deal in 3 months maximum. And I said, Barry, you know, I'm making these little payments to you. And the only reason was is I didn't have the staff. I was by myself. I was a one-man show, mm-hmm. you know. And I had an assistant who would come in and do some things for me, like answer the phone or whatever. But I was terrible at bookkeeping stuff and writing checks. I would forget. I'd forget to pay my own phone bill. I mean, I was really not good at it. But he sees me, and he's a tall, really slender guy. I swear, I thought he was like a million years old. I used to think to myself, this guy died years ago, and he just, no one told him, you know. And I would go in, and I would see him, and he would light up like a Christmas tree. And he'd never broke a smile out for anybody. Come on in. Get in here. And I would come in and sit down. I said, Barry, I need you to change some things. What do you want? Number one, I need you to accumulate my payments. I don't want to be bothered with that till the end. I just want to pay everything at one time. Well, I don't care what you charge me. That's what I want. I said, number two, I need you to increase the loan to value that you're giving me right now. Cause he still had me like at 50% soaking wet, you know, and my deals were fabulous. They got better as I got, you know, buying. And I said, I need you to cover 100% of my acquisition costs plus my fix up. Well, I said, Barry, and the reason is because he asked me why. I said, well, I'm moving too fast. And you know, we're going from one deal to two to three to four. I got 9 to 10 deals coming your way, and that's on a weekly basis.
Yeah, which means you have a 50 house inventory or some ridiculous
no time.
Thing.
I got construction crews. I got stuff going on. I had to hire 2 crews, 11 people, 7 people. It was like a crazy thing.
Yeah.
And I said, I can't be bothered with this other stuff. You gotta handle this. Well, let me see. And he starts writing down. He says, you know, we're going to have to charge you interest on the interest. And then and he could see he was getting happy. You know, he said, okay, I have no problem with that.
Well, you know, I mean, and you know how it works. He's got an investor behind him. He's got to explain this to him.
Right, right. But he had been, he goes on to tell me that day that he can do it because he used to be a house guy. At one time, he had like over 100 properties that he owned,
okay.
And he was doing 10, 15 rehabs at a time and
okay.
all that. So a lot of the guys that he dealt with were his buddies. So he says, we're going to do this. He goes, but it's primarily for one reason. And he gets up and he shakes my hand. He goes, I want you to know, I'm very happy to do business with you. You're a great buyer. He goes, and every night I kneel and pray that you go sideways so I can take all those properties. Yeah. And we both laughed. I want you to know, we both laughed about that because he was just teasing me.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't want to own that stuff, but he was just ecstatic that I knew he felt confident in my decision making.
Okay. What is unusual about you is people's reaction to you. It is. That guy's reaction, like you said, he doesn't smile at anybody.
Right.
And
right.
He's like adopted you as a son.
Yeah.
I mean, remember when we had you speak at the Millionaire Maker
yeah.
in 05?
Yeah.
I remember when you got done, there was a line of people that wanted to hug you.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, I figured that was going to happen. I put you last because I thought I don't want anybody following this guy speaking.
Yeah,
and you had not spoken before in
no.
front of a real estate audience.
No,
you just have something about you that people are attracted to.
You know, I'm gonna be very frank with you about this because after that, I was never as happy with my presentations as I was that day speaking for the Norris Group at your request. Never. I was never as frightened before I got up there. I went to you and I was like, I don't know about this. You know, this at the last minute, you know. And you asked me a question which stood me right up. You said, you gonna lie to anybody about anything here? And I was like, whoa, wait a second. And you reminded me, I think, in that moment that the only thing that we fear, you know, is when we're not going to be genuine, when we're not going to be open. You know, it's pretense, right? So I got out there. And I had the best day I've ever had, you know, and I've told you before, next to my son being born, which was outrageous for me. But it was something I didn't expect. I was there more as a participant in the audience than I was on stage. I don't think that a lot of the things that just came out of me in that presentation, and I've watched it many times. And anytime I watch it, I walk away with the same feeling. Man, that guy's good. But I don't identify with him as me.
Interesting.
Yes. I've never been that good.
You know, that it's interesting that every one of those people that participated in that few days was hand-selected because their methodology was different.
Right.
So you had a Jack Fullerton that door-knocked a neighborhood
yes.
and bought houses. You had Charles Harris,
yeah.
who got on the phone for 2 hours and was not fearful of anybody yelling at him or screaming at him about foreclosures. And then he would go door-knock in a suit foreclosures. And everyone had a niche that they had perfected that matched them. And that's kind of what I wanted for that event, is to say, you're going to align with somebody. And what your strength is you build relationships that send you stuff.
Well, yeah. But it's because at some level, very early on, I relied on to really grow in business was the stuff I learned coming to this country from Cuba, and the stuff I learned from my mom and my dad, and what really got us to succeed as a family in this country is all I did was when I found myself in a position where I didn't have any money, my credit was horrific. I mean, who the heck is going to deal with me based on that criteria? Let's face it, nobody. I mean, so what did I have to do? The only thing I really had of any value was that I had been an appraiser. I had had some experience in business before in real estate. I had had some success. But listen, when you have success and then you crash and burn as big as that, because I had never done anything small. I pushed up and came down like a rocket. It destroys you.
Mm-hmm.
It internally, you every time someone has ever said to you in your life, you're not that bright, in that moment, it is you're confirming all of that, and you realize, you know, they're right.
Yeah, they're right.
I'm not
that
bright.
Got lucky to do that.
Yeah, who the hell am I to even think? You know, I mean, really, I mean, I must have been a clown to these people.
You've reached your stride again by delivering pizzas and walking home.
There you go. Yeah, and I was comfortable with that.
Yeah.
And it was a slow process back. But like I said, there's certain things that I focus my attention on that energize me. Speaking to an audience where I'm not concerned about charging them money. I I'm a capitalist. I want you to know I'm not like a nonprofit organization or anything. I'm a capitalist at heart. But when it comes to sharing something with someone that I believe can change their life for the better, I'm paying back a debt.
That's cool. Yeah, that's okay. You know what? Give me a teacher that tears up at why he's standing in front of me any day. I buy into Jim Rohn because of that.
Yeah.
That's, you know, when I first time, my first note, that's now it just comes to mind, my brother sitting next to me, I didn't want to be there 3 hours. I thought, oh my God, I can't sit through anything for 3 hours. My first note to my brother was, this man doesn't need our money. He was there for a completely different reason, and I got it right away.
Yeah, and I donate. You know, but that's one of the reasons, and I mentioned to you before we get started on this interview, is that I stopped speaking was because I was unhappy with myself. I didn't understand it, and it took me a while. I'm up in Oregon, I'm doing my thing, and I'm going through drive-thrus, and I'm identifying, you know, like I said, a group of kids in Starbucks, and I see one that stands out as a hard worker, and I carry a box of my books in the car, and I'm calling them over and saying, here, take this book, and I don't even want anybody else to see it, because then, you know, other people go, hey, can I have one too? They're never going to read it, you know, but they want one too, you know. I see a kid, a younger person, you know, at Home Depot who's working their heart out, and I want to share something with them that, hey, look, you put that much effort into this job, you take a tenth of that effort and you put it into this business, and you will own a Home Depot. I mean, it doesn't change your whole life. And by the way, remember what just happened here between you and I, because you owe that to the next generation, to the next person or someone else in your life. So that fires me up, see?
It's fun to think that way too, by the way, for you.
Yeah.
I kind of do that, pay attention to people that are serving me or people that are,
right.
You know, and you just sometimes you meet an all-star.
Exactly.
And you're just like, I haven't thought about the book idea. But I carry $100 bills.
I think if you give them a choice, they'll go for yours over my book.
But usually it is involved in me getting the manager.
Okay.
And I will say, you know, you've got an all-star on your hands. This is why I'm doing this, and this is what I'm giving him. But you need to know why. You know, because that's unusual. I was at a place, a Starbucks, and this was a kid was there at 6 in the morning. He's all perky, and he's looking at me. He goes, "You're not here for you, huh?" I said, "No, here for my wife, Sandy." So I had to give him the order. The next morning, so the guy goes through the whole shift. At 6:02 in the morning, next morning, I'm walking up. I'm 15 feet away. He goes, "Sandy," and boom. You just go, oh, my God. You know, it's just fun when you kind of meet somebody. You go, okay, this kid's going someplace. I don't know where it's going to be.
Yeah.
But it just makes it fun because if you own a company, sometimes you can get hired. I got hired from a hardware store by that event, that exact event. The guy watched me go twice as fast as everybody, and he came up to me. He said, "Would you like to work for my company?" I mean, that's just like, huh?
Yeah.
But people observe.
You know, I was on my drive here, and I shouldn't admit this because, you know, it's a distraction while you're driving, but my phone sits in this new Tundra truck that I bought for myself. It sits in this little thing here, and I occasionally do peek into Facebook while my car is moving. And there was this thing that came on that I reposted that, you know, that it's about an actress. And in the end, after they have music and all this stuff, and I always get really, things like that really affect me at a motivational level because a true story. I love history. I love true stories about people's lives. I love real, whether success, failures, all the things that people experience that are real, not made up. And I believe it was Audrey Hepburn. No, I can't remember exactly. But at the end it says that she went on to do a lot of working with a lot of orphans and stuff throughout the world. And it says that one of her quotes, it says that, you know, we have two hands, one to help ourselves and then one to help someone else. And things like that kind of bring me back to the purpose, my purpose for being here. I don't know about anybody else's. Quite frankly, I got too much work to do on my own to even think about. My purpose is to do the best I can with me, to know it's real, right? To confirm it for myself that it's real. And then to share that with anyone, or whenever something smacks me in the head and goes, "Tony, look at that kid." Whatever energy that is that's directing my attention, I have to respect that, and so I have to do what I'm asked to do. And that's my job. You're given things to do. Now, I was asked, "Why are you coming back to speaking and all that kind of stuff?" It's not for money, and I don't. And I've already made that point. I make plenty of money. I make a lot of money. I don't need not even a tenth of the stuff that comes in my direction. I've learned one thing: you cannot hide from what you're given to do. And all of us are given things to do. Tony has been given to share the truth about what he learned in his life, about making money, about how I stopped, you know, losing it, the people that I meet along the way that have given me a hand that changed things in my life, you being one of them. You know, and it's my responsibility to open my mouth. I only got so many years. I mean, do you know when you're leaving? I have no clue. Thanks to you reminding me I'm in my last quarter in that last present, the thing that you did. Now I'm more conscious about it. But, you know, so I got to do the best I can, you know, for me and then to share that. And I'm in the sharing mood. You know, I'm just fired up about it.
See, what's interesting about that last quarter concept, it's because, you know, in dealing with a lot of the people that we deal with, the financial part of it has been taken care of many times over. So if you thought the goal was $1,100,000,
yeah,
okay, yeah, if you were back there now, you'd think, "Oh my God, I'm poor, I got to hustle." But but the majority of the world is still working on that plan, hoping to someday get there. So what do you do with your time if you've amassed all this stuff way more times than you thought I'll ever need?
Right.
What do you do tomorrow? And see, everybody's answer is different. Exactly. You know, if I ask that to Tony Alvarez or Rick Solis or Mike Cantu, the answer has been very different for them. I'm going to go to lunch with everybody this month, actually. Mm. And that's going to be part of it. What's interesting, Rick has sold everything.
Right.
So he's just kind of off.
Yeah. No. And I
he's
know.
Pretty young.
He always wanted to do. He would always talk about that stuff. Oh, you know. And you know. in Gulliver, the story Gulliver, there's all those little Lilliputians or whatever they are, and there's always one there's one that's always going, oh, this will never work. And that guy reminded me of Rick sometimes. I love Rick, okay, but Rick would always say, oh God, I don't want to have to talk, and that's why he partnered up with certain people that did the things he didn't want to do.
Right.
I've never seen anybody as fast to arrive at a value. By the way, you call that guy on the phone, you give him the address, and he's like, boom. But I love, and I couldn't get over that. Him and I would talk about, speaking in front of a crowd and stuff like that. And we would share the things about it that we didn't like, but I think I've loved connecting with people from the very first time I spoke for the Norris Group on that stage. I really didn't understand why it worked as well as it did. Until afterwards. It had to do with the fact that I told them the truth, nothing but the truth, and I shared the things that I found in my life to be a real and that really caused real positive change for me. I shared that and I conveyed it, and it came across some way that resonated with those people, and so they wanted to get their arms around whoever or whatever brought this information to them. That's where the hugging thing, I think, started.
Oh, what's cool about the Millionaire Maker, we've done three of them, is that event is not about real estate per se. It's about who you bring into the business.
Right.
Working on yourself. And so that's why we have a Diana Nyad. You go watch that documentary and you just shake your head. If I ever tried it, anything, you have to think, okay, maybe I haven't.
Yeah, that was pretty riveting, actually.
Yeah, you just think about some people in the
No, I couldn't even journey. Understand that, because I come from Cuba, so the fact that she swam, I know people that have died, and they die monthly, weekly, trying to get from Cuba here. Still today.
In a boat, probably. Not a swim.
No. In makeshift rafts and right. stuff that fall apart, and that, one person sees another family member getting eaten by sharks. I mean, this happens every day. It's not an anomaly. But she actually got in there and dealt with, there's a point in that video that you show where she's like been
stung
to, and she doesn't even look like her, like the same person.
Just would not give up.
All I had to do was buy houses.
Yeah, and so if you
I should send her my money.
If you take that will and put it into something. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got a minute and a half. Who's your favorite mentor? Real estate, just anything. It's somebody that just...
Guy Finley,
okay. Yeah. And what does he do that inspires you?
He teaches, he's up in the foundation up in Merlin, Oregon. And that's why I live right down the street from there. And he taught me to pay attention to my own mind, my own thoughts, and to really be a shepherd of my behavior internally. Because that was part of me failing all the time, is that we listen to our nonsense all the time. Our brain is constantly telling us, do this, do that, do this, do that. And we're directed by fear. And he taught me to recognize the difference between psychological fear, physical fear. There is a vast difference between the two. And to become more aware about what's going on in my head before I take actions, in the world. And because many times we chase, we chase money, we chase success, we chase all these things, and then we crash and burn. And we're the ones directing all of those decisions. The mm-hmm. same mind that tells you to do something, then will punish you for doing it. So, he's way at the top of the list for me, and he's dedicated. And if you look into his past, he was best friends with Desi Arnaz Jr., and their families were very close, Lucille Ball and all that stuff. And he comes from Hollywood. He left all that. He wrote the song for Remember Streets of San Francisco?
Sure.
He was a musician, and he was the first, actually the first Anglo, I think, to be signed by Motown Records.
Interesting.
Well,
Tony, we have run out of time.
I'm so surprised.
I didn't even have to look at my questions.
I apologize. I should let you do your questions next time if we ever get together again.
No, this is what I always try to do, is listen to your responses, and that you make up better questions just by your responses. I don't need a question.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.